This is Scott Becker with Becker's Healthcare's podcast. Nicole Fisher is joining me today. Nicole is with Health and Human Rights Strategies. We're going to talk about that today and what she does and more. Nicole, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Sure. Well, first, thank you for having me. And second, so as you said, I'm the founder and president of Health and Human Rights Strategies, which is a human rights-based firm in Washington, D.C. My background is actually in neuroscience and health policy. So what that really means is I obsess over human behavior and how people actually interact with the health system and the world. And it's led to some pretty cool things, like a human rights firm. I also host a summit focused on health at the Super Bowl every year, which is a great platform to talk about health and mental health and bringing people together. And then on occasion, I wear a media hat, and mostly I contribute to Forbes, but I do lots of other speaking engagements and talks and emceeing events, things where I get to ask really smart people lots of questions about the world.
Nicole, let me ask you a question. You do a number of different things. You speak, you write, you founded a firm called Health and Human Rights Strategies. You host a summit. You're sort of in the media world as well. Tell us a little bit about the founding of Health and Human Rights Strategies and just sort of quickly the core of the mission to it, the core of what you're trying to do.
Sure. Well, when I founded Health and Human Rights Strategies, it was really to improve health outcomes by advancing human rights and solving complex problems. And that really means bringing experts from many different fields together to do strategic planning and solve really big problems like access to clean water. And that could be somewhere like an island nation, right? They inherently don't have clean water, or it could be Flint, Michigan. And so we believe that it's really bringing, you know, quality care to people through just basic access and human rights.
Thank you. And let me ask you, when you look at the landscape of issues, and there's so many of them, do you have a sense of what you see as the biggest human rights issues today or the biggest healthcare issues today, either one?
Well, I mean, I think they go hand in hand. And here, you know, we frequently talk about cost, access, quality, the pillars. But at the end of the day, I feel like those are really your context. Or here we often say social determinants of health. But the average lay person doesn't really know what a social determinant of health is. It doesn't mean much to them. But when you talk to people about, you know, their context, where they live, where they go to school, what they do during their day, what they have access to, it really registers with them. And so I think for us, you know, getting people to really understand that an insurance card doesn't equal health. Right? It's really your context and those holistic things about us. You know, I think another big issue, again, taking sort of a step back in that global space, is looking at diseases and sort of what's happening in the world. We're seeing some frightening trends, to be honest, between vaccinations, antimicrobial resistance, and then with globalization, you know, I would say those boil down to trust. We've got a lot of work to do to build trust again in science and health.
When you talk about some of the dangerous things going on in the world, some of the threats, you had mentioned a couple. Talk to us about that. What are the things that sort of you view as trends that are scary in the world?
Well, I mean, so a couple I threw out were vaccinations and antimicrobial resistance. These are consistent problems we're seeing all over the world, decreases in vaccination rates. I think in maybe it was 2018 into 19, there were areas of Southern California, wealthy areas, that had vaccination rates on par with South Sudan. And, you know, that's a choice. And so we're seeing these trends that, you know, there's a lot of diseases we haven't seen in a long time. And because of that, I think in combination with what I would say is a world of holistically, people have lost some faith in academic institutions and science. And so you bring those together and all of a sudden we're seeing a rise in things we haven't seen in a long time, or diseases and bacteria that are building up resistance to medications we've been using for decades.
Thank you. And we talk about the vaccine issue. When you say that some of the vaccine percentages, vaccination rates are on par with South Sudan, you mean that as a negative?
I do. In terms of looking at some of these communities where we need herd immunity, we've heard of cases where, you know, we've seen polio come back. We've seen a lot of things that can be very debilitating, if not life-threatening.
But let me ask you a question. You use the phrase herd immunity, and of course, it's a great phrase because I intrinsically know exactly what you mean, although I haven't heard the phrase before. In the health and human rights world that you inhabit, I mean, I love the phrase, actually. Are there some other phrases like that that, you know, a somewhat layperson like me would then say, oh, that's an interesting phrase. I love that turn of phrase.
I don't know. I've never thought of that. These are things I just say because they are part of my world and my lexicon. No, but I do really like that one because, as you said, it lends itself to just something people understand. Well, actually, earlier I used the word context. And I think people, you know, we used to use it mostly in talking about things like race. When you say, like, hey, context matters, people understand what that means. But when you apply it to health and you say, well, your social determinants, you know, dictate, it loses its meaning. And so I think in some ways, a positive to communication is we are coming back to a place via, you know, it could even be things like Twitter, where people have more access to lay terms about what's going on in the world. So, yeah, but we should aim for herd immunity. It helps us all.
No, and I love that, actually. It's a fascinating phrase and so forth. And in terms of, you know, the vaccination rates is a fascinating issue. The people that are anti-vax, pro-vax. Mm-hmm. Of course, we all grew up in a period of time, at least I did, where everybody had to be vaccinated. It wasn't even a question. And then, of course, you know, this is great unfortunateness about the world. There can be some micro small percentage that reacts badly to vaccines. And yet sure. We do need herd immunity. And so there's an imperfection to everything. In including that. But again, sort of the return of sort of like super germs, super infections, super bacteria that are resistant to antibiotics is a debacle as that grows in mushrooms. And that just is a true debacle.
It is. And as people move, you know, across borders, you know, bacteria, viruses, borders mean nothing to them. Hosts are what matter.
Yes, they mean something to the government, but they don't mean a lot to individual people or to the germs or diseases. They don't really take border security seriously. The germs and diseases. Exactly. The Super Bowl summit seems such a unusual juxtaposition for health and human rights strategies. How did you start founding a summit at the Super Bowl, and if your team, like mine, the Chicago Bears, never goes to the Super Bowl, are you still allowed to buy a ticket to the summit that you host at the Super Bowl?
You are more than welcome to the summit. And I, too, am a Bears fan, so I feel your pain. Well, it actually was an accident of how this happened. I never planned on working in sport, but I was speaking at the UN a while back, years ago now, on World Brain Day. And talking about the future of, you know, brain health, brain injury, and I met some really wonderful people, and we, you know, really agreed that I've always viewed sport as a form of diplomacy. You know, children don't have to speak the same language to play, and we look to a lot of these people as role models. We congregate around teams. You can do a lot with sport in forms of diplomacy all over the world. And so we just started having this conversation. And truthfully, because of my background in neuro, we really got hung up on brain injury. And it seemed this opportunity. Now, I will say, 6-7 years ago, talking about brain injury and words like concussion were wildly unpopular at the Super Bowl. And it was really difficult. But we believed in what we were doing, and I partnered with a guy named Lee Steinberg, who is an agent.
Sure, famous agent,
Yeah, the basis for the movie Jerry Maguire. So he actually, in the 80s, did write a manifesto, and it was on concussion. And he said he had a crisis of conscience where he, you know, is a wonderful agent. He has Patrick Mahomes right now, but these are humans. And we, you know, we have to have honest conversations about sport. And so we just decided to start a summit. And although we call it the Brain Health Summit, the day before the Super Bowl in the host city, we bring experts from all over together. I build a theme. And we have a really cool panel and then a huge star-filled party. But it's amazing to have people like, you know, Harvard scientists and Stanford neuroscientists in the audience, handshaking with celebrities and athletes and talking about mental health and diversity and access to care. And it's a really cool way to bring healthcare and I would say social good to a fun environment.
Fascinating. Let me ask you a question about Lee Steinberg. You could answer or not answer, whatever is comfortable. Lee was sort of for people that are of my generation, Lee was sort of the original quintessential sports agent, represented all the biggest players, and sure. Then had a horrible life unraveling, and then has rebuilt himself again. And it's been well documented, and that's why I feel comfortable asking the question. And you could comment or not, but talk for a moment about Lee Steinberg and his reemergence as an agent and getting his life back together, if you can. And if you can't, don't.
Oh, no. I think Lee, if anything, has been – I mean, the Brain Health Summit is a testament to, you know, he champions, or as we would say, he practiced what he preaches. He, you know, alcohol was his problem, and he has – absolutely no trouble admitting it. And he's been, I think, sober for 7 years now. And so, you know, I mentioned the crisis of conscience that he had in the 80s around concussions. And the conversations we had were really about brain health. And I actually think his issues are what really reinvigorated his passion towards, you know, being healthy isn't just not having knee surgery, you know, it's literally your brain. It's how you think. It's how you take care of yourself. It's your decision making, how you are with your family. It's all those things. And so I think been a model for how to be open and honest. And like I said, I mean, he gave us the opportunity to build a healthcare summit in the middle of the US's biggest sporting event. And to him, it just made complete sense.
Just absolutely fascinating. It really is. And then another follow-up question, which is really off the subject of human rights health strategies.
Okay.
Will the Bears ever return to greatness, or will it require an ownership change for that to happen?
The latter, I think. I really do. I think it's tough. I think we need some drastic changes.
Yeah, it really requires big corporate dollars behind these teams, or big money that, you know, where they don't want, but the Bears have spent lots of money. They just seem to be absolutely awful. And they're not awful, they're just mediocre. They're sort of not good, not horrible, somewhere in between. In terms of your own self, you've done some fascinating things. You do interesting things. You're obviously a very poised speaker, very smart. How do you keep yourself excited, motivated, day in, day out? How do you keep yourself balanced, centered? Those kinds of things.
I don't know that I can speak well to the balanced part, but I would say the motivation part comes to people. I've always thought of myself as a connector. I've, in recent years, been told I'm a maven, if you remember the Malcolm Gladwell framework. But I think that comes from being inherently curious, which is why I love just talking to smart people and asking questions. But I also really, my greatest joy comes from connecting people. I believe 1 + 1 should equal 50. And if 1 + 1 = 2, then we've done a disservice because better things should come from an introduction. And so, you know, that lends itself to being surrounded by people who are doing incredible work and being really creative in traditionally non-creative spaces, which is a lot of healthcare.
Well, just fascinating. In the community that I grew up in, the phrase maven was used often. It's often used at home today to describe people that have opinions on everything. So we view it as a good and a bad, but it's a constant discussion of like about opinions about a million different things. But it's a fascinating, fascinating, you know, being that connector, being that person that people look to you for guidance, for advice, and enjoys combining resources to make things better. It is a true winning thing. So I love that view of the world and fascinating. You know, I heard immunity, love, context, love, maven I'm in between on, but I'm not as crazy about it because it gets used constantly in our household. I can't even tell you. But anyways,
so that's strange to me. That's the opposite. When people first started saying that to me, I looked it up. I literally was like, what does that mean? Why are you saying this to me? I'm a connector. I like that word. But no, so I guess it depends on the setting.
It depends on the context exactly. Maybe it could be someone who's over-opinionated, or it could be someone who's a magnificent connector and life force and really positive spirit. It could be sort of both or a combination of those things. So just fascinating.
Let's just lean towards the second one. We'll just assume it's the second one.
We're on board on synergistic connecting and someone who's a leader in spirit. It's fantastic. It's more like a mix of a matriarch / maven type thing. Either way is fantastic. Nicole, I want to thank you for joining us today. Really just a pleasure to visit with you. I love what you do with health and human rights strategies, and I just loved visiting with you. So thank you very, very much. How could people reach you if they want to learn more about your firm or book you as a speaker or visit with you about business?
I'm pretty easy to find on social media. So most things are under Nick, N-I-C, Fisher, just short for Nicole. And then Nicole at hhrstrategies.com if you just want to shoot me an email. But otherwise, yeah, look me up because of my Forbes page and most of my social media are pretty easy to find. And everything filters into my email. I really do answer. If it's directed at me, I really do answer all of my own email.
Fantastic.
Happy to connect with everyone.
Well, thank you so much. Nicole, just a pleasure visiting with you. We'll get this published and distributed after the first of the year, and just a pleasure visiting with you. Thank you so much.
And if, you know, by any chance you find yourself in Miami, you are welcome to the Super Bowl Brain Summit.
That is fantastic. It's a place we'd like to be. I'd be happier and more excited to be there if my beers ever got there again, but a pleasure, and thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much.